Greetings, EastEnders fans, and welcome to another episode of Albert Square After Dark, your weekly EastEnders podcast. This week, discussing the episodes broadcast between the 6th and the 9th of May, 2024. Hello! How are you? You're right. Good, good, good. Glad to hear it. Did she? Wow. I mean, I wouldn't put up with that if I were you. You tell her. Anyway, hi. I'm Rob. This is Ree. Hello, Ree. How are you this week?
I'm all right, thanks, Rob. It's always woman who's got to do something wrong with you, isn't it? Hey, couldn't it be telling
him? We are 30 seconds into the podcast and you're already accusing me of sexism. I mean, what? Great. You keep that gender roles neutral, why don't you? How are you this week, Ree?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
I'm all right, yeah. Ree, I want to dye my hair. I mean, what colour do you think I should go? I mean, normally I go blonde, don't I? But I, you know,
I remember you having it blue at one point. I'm sure you've had blue when we were at uni. I remember those days. Go fun, Rob. Blue-haired Rob.
Back at uni, I'd have hair like Joseph's Technicolor Dreamcoat. It was marvellous back in those days. I mean,
I remember your little fro as well that you had at one point, your blonde fro.
Oh, practically went to Bouffante at one point, didn't it? Like, it was huge. Yeah. Like, my hair doesn't grow down, it grows out.
Yes, so it definitely does.
I'm always grateful when I've got it cut, because I have some vague idea what to do with it. Just, like, stick a bit of gel in there and I'm happy. When it gets to, like, Donald Trump lengths, I've got no clue what to do with it. It's ridiculous.
But why do you need to dye it? Leave it as it is?
Well,
I like it as it is.
You know, sometimes you fancy a change, don't you? Sometimes you fancy a change. I've not had it dyed for a while. If you're watching on YouTube, let me know what colour you think I should dye my hair. If you've seen it blonde before, do you think I should go back there again? Let me know. Just let me know. Right, so, talking about EastEnders this week, Ree.
Oh, yeah, that's what we're here for.
That's what we're here for. You know that thing that we do every week? We'll do it again here, just for a change.
Yeah.
What about that two-hander, eh? We had a two-hander this week, and... yes, it delivered.
Brilliant.
I enjoyed it. Oh, loved it. It was great. What performances, what scripts, what an era. Oh, just keeps on knocking them out of the park.
We keep saying
running
it.
Out of balls.
Like,
how often do we
keep saying, like, oh, they just keep chucking them at us just when we think we can't get anything else? We're, like, saying it every other week.
And then they go, all right, well, now we'll just go two-hander. How about that? Let's go two-hander with two of the show's strongest actors. How about that?
Well, there you go. So is it Tuesday? Have this two-hander then.
Go on. Just randomly in the middle of the week. Oh, have a two-hander. Oh, I love it. Why not? So we should talk about the two-hander in great forensic detail later on in the podcast, but we have a few stories to get to before we get to that. So let's get on with this week's Albert Square After Dark. Right, ladies and gents, let's talk about, first of all, George, Cindy and Elaine. And I have to say, this by the nice old duff-duff at the end of the week, I gasped. I like to gasp at a duff-duff. I didn't see that coming at all. This is quite exciting.
No, me neither. I did not see that one.
Mm. Elaine is now going to be sat in her kitchen, like, just all paranoid. The words, any minute now, just going through her head.
Oh, do you know what? I know we're jumping ahead a bit here, but when that duff-duff happened, I felt so sorry for Elaine.
I know, right?
Now I'm like, Cindy,
you flip-flop like a fish, you do, don't you?
Don't take much, does it?
No, it doesn't. I mean, George had a busy old week, right? So
yes,
obviously
he has
missed the funeral of Gloria because Eddie's a bastard. Mm. So the girls are kind of like, right, well, let's do a service. Let's do a sort of our own little memorial ceremony. I do think it's really sad, though, that Gloria hasn't had that final wish of being... like cremated and being away from Eddie. That's a really kind of sad little facet to the story, I think.
Yeah, especially as it were a last dying wish. Mm. But I'm sure that happens a lot in real life as well.
Can you not pull up a body and just cremate it? Is that not
I was just thinking that when you said it. No, I doubt it. No, because they have to do it in the coffin and stuff, don't they?
Pull the coffin up, but there must be some people that have been buried and cremated. Like, you know, people get the choice. I might say, oh, both.
Well, you could be cremated
bury
and then
me.
Have a headstone.
Yeah, and then pull me up and then burn me. That's a thing.
No, I don't think it is.
Sounds expensive.
I was just thinking, actually, wouldn't it be more expensive for it to be buried these days?
Why?
Because, like, there's not as much land left
price of excavators these days.
No, I'm sure it has, yeah. It's like, it works out better to be cremated, I'm sure, because otherwise you've got to buy a plot of land, haven't you, to be...
Yeah, so, that's true, yeah. All you need to
do they said that he'd...
start one of your bonfires
in the garden.
He reserved
it about 20 years ago or something, didn't they?
Anyway, so poor Gloria doesn't get that last wish. So George is sort of having a wobble this week and is sort of, you know, clearly going through some stuff, and he keeps going to this fight club. And he returns one day with like his knuckles all sorts of bruised and everything. And this guy, Rufus, is it Rufus? I think it's Rufus,
yeah,
isn't
I
it?
Think so.
He's messaging him and saying, oh,
Ruthless.
Yeah, Rufus, there you go. messaging him and like basically encouraging this to happen because clearly money is being made, bets are being made. So it's in his best interest that George keeps going to this. And then at the ceremony that they kind of do, which is basically just a little gathering in the Square Gardens. George's vision starts to get all blurry, and then he collapses, and then he and then already at this point we've got this whole sort of Cindy and Elaine little jibing. I am enjoying this feud. I have to say this is a good feud.
Yeah, it is.
I
good.
Like it.
It is.
I'm
good.
Looking forward to when it comes to a head and they like get to slap each other and stuff and have like a screaming slanging match. That's going to be good.
Yeah, they would
to
slap
that.
It.
Oh yeah.
I hope it's Elaine who slaps Cindy anyway.
Well, they'll slap each other. It's just a long-running feud. That's what this is. The one thing that we're missing at the moment is like a really iconic like feud that's kind of going on for a little while.
Yeah, because we could have had it with Kat and Sharon, but they ended up being friends, didn't they?
Yeah, so
that was
going to
be a whole Pat Peggy situation.
Exactly. So yeah, the Pat can still be going on. You know, I mean, Pat's having a very quiet period at the moment, but I'm sure if they return to this story, they can keep the sort of Sharon because everyone's single at the moment in that triangle. So it's that's sort of up for grabs in which direction that's going to go in. But the Cindy and Elaine thing, I feel like this is, they've sort of been jibing each other from the start, but I feel like this is the real start of like a proper sort of feud developing, which I'm looking forward to. Anyway, so George gets taken to hospital and it turns out that he's got
what, Rob?
Right, he's got chronic traumatic encephalopathy, nearly. Encephalopathy.
Yes, that's the one.
CTE. That's what he's got.
CTE.
Can you imagine the actress playing the doctor?
The doctor
read that
yeah.
script and just like what? Like my big break, my big chance
to act with
encephalopathy. What? Oh, honestly, I'd have a nervous breakdown if I saw that in a script that I had to learn. Can you imagine? Anyway, so he's got CTE, which
he's
is basically.
Got CTE.
Which is basically like this sort of ailment where if you receive a lot of head injuries, it's quite common in the boxing community and like in the sporting community and everything. You were telling me a very interesting story about how footballers apparently have this they banned heading footballs and stuff like that.
Well,
did you say?
I don't know if I'm right on this, but I know at one point they were talking about banning footballers being able to head balls because they were getting like too much trauma on the head. So I'm wondering if it was CTE with that as well.
I would assume. Well, he's got it basically from all the, and obviously because this is bare knuckle fighting that he's doing in this fight club, they're going for it.
Yeah.
And it makes sense for boxers to sort of have this.
They'd normally wear a helmet, wouldn't they, in an official kind of boxing fight? They wear some headgear, don't they?
Yeah, like those weird teeth guards, which I always used to get confused about when I was a kid. I used to genuinely ask every single time I saw boxing on the telly, why has that man got green teeth or blue teeth or yellow teeth or whatever colour the guard was? Always used to confuse me. anyway, so. What happens then is because obviously Cindy and Elaine and the girls have all rushed to the hospital with George, and Cindy is obviously the only one at this stage who knows about the fight club. So she's kind of forced to say, will you just confess to what's going on here, please, George? Like, why has this happened? And then everybody sort of finds out. Cindy's then in the doghouse for keeping it a secret. Elaine is fuming again, I think, that Cindy has once again like had a secret over one like knows something else about George that she didn't realize. It's I do feel sorry for Elaine in this circumstance because it's just time and time again she gets reminded about how much closer him and Cindy are to how they are.
I agree, but then sometimes I think that Elaine not brings it on herself, but she can sometimes be incredibly dismissive over things, and then I think, well, this is why you don't know the information that you should, almost like when he ran off that time and Cindy was the only one who said you need to go after him, and she's like, oh, he's a grown man, it'll be all right. Well, no, he's a grown man who's like really upset and grieving.
But I think she's trying to sort of almost be the cool aunt. Do you know what I mean? Like, sort of like, leave him alone. It'll be fine. It'll be fine. Like, she's trying to have that role with it, I think, which is quite interesting.
And
she's trying to, I think she's trying to make out that Cindy is sort of the overbearing one. She's basically trying to be the complete apathy to, the complete antithesis to Cindy. And so the pair of them have got that sort of distinction between them. But unfortunately, the Cindy method is working a lot better than the Elaine method. Exactly.
Like, even like, he's like, got double vision, just collapsed on the square. She's like, oh, I'll take you to the GP. We'll try and get a GP appointment or whatever. And Cindy's like, no, he's going to hospital. Obviously, Cindy knew a bit more, but still,
Sonia's
that
sort of
again,
looking across the room. I'm on my lunch break. Sod off. I ain't doing anything. So basically, George doesn't seem to be bothered about this. It's like, because this, if he has one more big punch to the head, it could be immediately fatal. That's basically the prognosis from this. And obviously, everybody's kind of like, well, then that needs to stop then. That seems to be the answer to this. You stop doing the fights and then you'll be okay. But...
Well, he goes to... It sounds like he's going to go fight again, right? Which makes me think, is it an addiction? You'd be addicted to fighting like
Well,
that.
Cindy, when they were having their argument, basically said, you know, you do realise this is a form of self-harm, don't you?
Yeah.
Which I think is closer to the truth. I think this is more, you know, he's punishing himself. He sees it as an outlet. I've never understood this method of
I don't
but
either,
it's always a but it's always a thing, isn't it?
Mm.
That you know, you've got to... Oh, can I just fell off the wall then, man? So you put yourself in these situations, and it's a sort of outlet. It's you're kind of airing your frustrations out and getting punched and punching out people. It's a dangerous way of doing it, and as the doctors have now proven to him, this could well be fatal. But he is still continuing because Rufus gets in touch and says, "Yeah, so same time again tomorrow." And Cindy sees the meeting across square. So again, Cindy's got that one-upmanship over Elaine. So she decides, right, okay, the best way to deal with this is I'm going to get you a therapy session. Like that. I know.
Well, I thought that, but it'll be private.
Probably,
it's not
yeah.
NHS. There's no way she's got it that quick on NHS.
No,
she's
I know.
Probably gone to a private therapist and said, yeah.
Yeah. And again, it doesn't work out very well, though, does it?
No, but fair play to Cindy, because that was a very good attempt at doing it. But I think one of the things with therapy is, if the person's not really that interested in doing it, it's not going to work, is it? Let's be honest.
No.
He's not really a let's talk out. I mean, like she says, a lot of men are like it, aren't they? They don't really, not very good
right,
at talking
yeah,
out
right
the feelings.
All right, there we go, stereotypes.
I'm waiting for it.
Yeah, but I mean, in this case, it's absolutely true when he sort of slams the laptop down. I mean, I don't know how much the therapy session cost him, but it was literally about 30 seconds long.
I know, and I was thinking, all right, what about Conrad? He's like, what's going on here? Like, I thought
well, Conrad's
Cindy
got
were
his
at least
money.
Gonna,
Conrad's
I thought she
got
was
his
going to
money.
Lift it up and be like, sorry, Conrad, I'm just going to go and see he's all right.
No, Conrad's got his money.
Him.
Conrad's perfectly happy. Like, the laptop got slammed down. It was like, sweet, early lunch.
Sweet. 45-minute break. Nice one.
It's me. Marvellous. So then the pair of them get into an argument and rush over to the Vic, and they're continuing this argument, and basically everything gets revealed to the girls and Elaine again. Elaine once again has that kind of confrontation of you are one step ahead, essentially. And so at the end of the week, Cindy kind of slips upstairs and the pair of them starts arguing, and Elaine threatens, Cindy threatens as a sort of last resort, if you go to this fight, I'm going to tell Elaine about our kiss. All right. And unbeknownst to both of them, Elaine is standing outside the door and overhears everything. So Elaine now knows about the kiss.
Poor Elaine.
I know,
poor
bless
Elaine.
Her.
Do you know, the other thing I've been thinking is, has Elaine just been distracted as well? Because she's also part of the Yolandi stuff. So has she maybe been a bit distracted and not been there for George as much as she could? Because she's
I think she thinks she's completely across all of it, you know. But she's took her eye off the ball with George. I don't know. I can't quite decide with Elaine whether it's the fact that she thinks everything's fine, or whether she is genuinely like taking her eye off the ball and the Cindy is sort of taking advantage of those gaps. You know what I mean?
I think you summed it up well, actually, saying that she's trying to take on the cool aunt role. Like, that is a very good way of putting it. I think that's what it is. She's trying to be like, oh, yeah, I'm cool, George. You're a guy. Do what you need to do. I'm just here when you want to come to me, rather than trying to push anything. Maybe that's what she's had in a previous relationship. Who knows where she's...
Because, like, if Elaine had walked in the barrel store and had seen George, like, down in that whiskey bottle, I could see Elaine just sort of reaching for her own bottle and just, like, go, and just sort of drinking together. And she'd do it. She kind of go in that way and try and sort of, like, be on his level with it, so that there's some, like, sort of desperate attempt to make it seem as though they're on the same level, whereas Cindy's just bollocked him, essentially, which seemed to work better.
Yeah, you know what, though? I could actually see Elaine doing either or. She'd either join in and be like, oh, go and get a, you know, Bailey's, or she'd be like,
down the Irish
cream. Even like what Cindy said, you know, it's not working for Linda, is it? She could have had that reaction as well, but yeah, I know what you're saying. With
it's
that.
Interesting, but I loved this twist at the end of the week. I thought that was a really, really nice moment. What next?
That's what I was just going to ask you. Is Elaine going to admit that she knows, or is she going to use?
No,
it to
I don't think she will.
Somehow?
I don't think she
no,
will. I
think
we'll have
so.
A moment. I think we'll have a moment next week where she's cornered Cindy, and somehow think that Cindy won't say anything to George. But I think, as far as George is concerned, she'll keep it completely stum. And will now up her game in trying to sort him out, and won't let anyone ever anywhere near him, and will sort of like try and just completely handle the situation on her own, thereby completely and utterly disregarding anything Linda needs, anything the rest of her family needs. That's what's going to happen. That's I think how Elaine will now deal with this.
I can see that. I don't know about her confronting Cindy though.
I think she won't be able to resist. I don't think she'll be able to resist it.
Do you know? I think she's going to keep it all contained to herself. And just
maybe
use it how she sees best. I don't know.
Maybe.
But we've also got, spoiler alert, that's not a spoiler that's got announced, George Jr.
returning at some point.
So
discussed
how's
this
that
last
all going to
slot
in?
Yeah, so we discussed this last week. Obviously, Anna and George have both tried to get in contact with Junior this week. And that was sort of, that I think might be the girls' next route. They're going to try and, or maybe Elaine will do it as well. Like maybe Elaine will kind of push the girls and keep bringing Junior up, because I feel that Junior is now the best option for George to sort of be pulled away from the fight. But we don't know how Junior's going to be brought into it. It may well be that Junior turns up at one of these fights as an opponent.
I'm telling you, he's going to be George's opponent. Hey, you
and
see
they're
it now,
forced
don't
to
you?
Fight. They're forced to fight.
Yeah. And then Gina and Anna will turn up and go, Junior, you can't. Dad can't take one more blow to the head.
Bear in mind this trailer that we got with how Junior was going to be introduced. And they're all in a boxing ring and the girls are there. Cindy and Elaine are in this boxing ring. The gloves are off. So
maybe Cindy and Elaine are going to take up the boxing instead.
Yeah,
and they're going to
they
replace
the boys out
both
of the way
the Georges.
They push the boys out of the way.
Go, right,
Elaine pulls
on
her boxing
me,
gloves.
bets on me.
Get in the ring, bitch. I'm going to sort you out. That would be amazing. I hope that happens. really hope
know.
That happens. You never know. Right, so yeah, but I'm looking forward to seeing how this all plays out next week. Very, very nice twist at the end of the week. Did not see it coming. So yeah, good stuff. Really good stuff. Right, ladies and gents, let's talk about the next story. So, I mean, hands up, all right? You all jumped in the comment section last week when we were talking about this storyline last week. And
fair.
We like to be corrected. This is how we stay correct on things all the time.
We love being corrected.
We love being
corrected. Please do it
more. Nothing I like more than being corrected. But no, fair enough. We were talking about the Mitchell family tree last week. And to be fair to me, I was doing it off the top of my head. Because the Mitchell family tree is more like a forest on its own sometimes, all right? And I said wrongly that Janice is named after Billy's mum when she wasn't, that she was named after Honey's mum. So thank you to all the
I just agreed with Rob because I thought it was the encyclopedia of all EastEnders knowledge.
Yeah,
but really
me.
I should have jumped in and said it was clearly Honey's mum, Rob.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
Know.
So slapped wrists, absolutely right. Thank you for everyone that corrected us in the comments. Do that. Seriously though, do that.
Yeah,
because
no,
it keeps
fine.
Us informed. And there's always somebody that knows more than you about a subject.
We don't
there,
want to
so.
Spread misinformation
no.
about EastEnders, do we?
Last thing I'd want. So the Stevie storyline continued this week.
Yes.
I still don't know if I trust him. I really don't. And it's got to a stage now
where
Billy is the only one. I mean, Phil obviously is keeping an eye on him, which is the fact that Billy and Phil are the only ones that don't trust him, and everybody else is going, oh, give him a chance. Dramatically, that makes me think that there's still something dodgy about him. Do you know what I mean? Like,
and
in terms of story-wise.
And for me, another thing is, Honey, like last week, the week before, was saying how great a judge of character she is and how much she loves
she's
Nadine.
Awful. Yeah.
And now she loves Stevie. So I'm like, is that why they dropped that in? Her saying, oh, I'm a great judge of character, to prove that she's not and that Stevie is up to something. I also think Honey's being way too pushy.
I saw a few people saying this week. Yeah.
I think his dad's just
doing his own
after
time
all these years. Yeah, stop pushing him if he's not ready.
But at the same time, I think that seeing as though what happens with Billy this week and the way that he sort of, like, his relationship with Will really starts to disintegrate quite a lot this week. And I almost feel like Honey was basically saying, right, okay, so if the option is, if you stay angry at your dad, this continues, or whether you give him a chance, you might sort of chill out a little bit. Maybe we should go down the maybe chilling you out a little bit routes. And maybe if you try and give him a chance, that might sort of temper the waters between you and Will a little bit.
I
know what you mean completely. I get what you're saying.
No,
it's
a difficult one as well, because Will's of an age where he can make a decision on whether he wants to get to know his granddad as well. Talking so I of can kind of see the point of if when he's saying he's going to be around anyway, make your life a bit easier.
Well, what I'd like to say at this point, talking of Will, I'd like to throw a shout out to Freddie Phillips this week. Proper good little actor he's turning into, isn't he?
He's doing himself all right, actually. He's doing good.
And him and Grace, who plays Janet, have both been promoted to adult people in the credits. I think Will had a little while ago, but Grace has now reached her age where she's amongst the adults. I remember them both being born.
Oh,
it's
wow.
So depressing. I mean, it only happened. I mean, Will's only like 10 years younger than me, obviously. So I think
10.
Yeah,
double it.
In dog years, maybe. But some really, really good stuff with the storyline this week. I really enjoyed the scenes with Stevie getting to know the kids. The scenes where he was getting to know Janet were really, really nice. And it does endear you to Stevie, where he's getting to know the kids and he's basically, he's being a good granddad sort of. There was a nice moment with Janet and Will and talking about like, well, okay, I'm flying blind here. You need to teach me how to get to know Janet and Janet had some great moments this week. I really enjoyed it. And it does endear you to Stevie, but at the same time, I'm sort of like, I'm not convinced that it's all as cut and dry as this yet.
Oh, I think that's what we're supposed to be thinking as well.
Do you reckon?
Do we trust him or don't we trust
him?
Yeah.
I think at the very I still think he's going to be like dead by June, July. And like
there
he's
is
come,
that.
He's coming to make, as he come, I, someone suggested to me this week that maybe he's after an organ.
Oh, no, that's a fair point though, actually. But then they had that scene with Billy in the Queen Vic and his, Billy's implying, oh, you're just after money and he's going, I'm living in all right flat. I've had this jacket since 1985, Everything's fine. So it's like, well, and do you know what? I often think, why would you go, like, surely, Billy's not made of money. Like, he's not going to have that
much
exactly.
That
he could
offer
to you
anyway. Of all the Mitchells, why would you go after Billy? It's an odd one. I mean, I would like him to be legit. I'd like this to continue. But I feel like there is something. We're going to get it's an end of week duff at some point. It's going to be a reveal, I think, about what Stevie is actually up to, who he's connected to. It's something I think is going to happen.
You reckon?
Who
would he be connected to, though?
I don't
know.
Why would
he be trying to do something?
No, it could be anybody. But we might not even know the person he's connected to. But I feel like something is happening where... Because at the end of the day... The right people that are normally quite good at knowing when someone's supposed to have kept it, like Phil is normally, for all his faults, Phil is normally someone who's quite on the ball with this sort of thing. So for Phil to be suspicious at this stage, I feel like is telling.
And
that
also, they're the ones who know him better than anyone else. They've only just met the guy.
They've only just met this guy, whereas Billy and Phil have got this sort of previous experience with Stevie. Although it was interesting this week, when Billy and Will had that argument in the calf and they were sort of squaring up to each other, and Billy was basically blaming Stevie for like how he nearly hit Will. And you sort of think, of all Stevie's faults, he wasn't violent towards Billy. And are you blaming Stevie for you being violent towards Jamie as well? It was being in care that made Billy violent.
Yeah,
I know
exactly.
That. So by connection, I think he's blaming Stevie for that.
That is what he's saying there.
But I feel like it's sort of like it's blaming somebody else for your own direct behaviour at that stage, surely, because Billy's old enough and ugly enough to know that what's right and wrong at this stage in his life, surely.
I know what you mean, but then I don't know. Maybe if he got that emotionally dysregulated in that moment, it's taking him back to being in the care home and then feeling rejected by his own dad who put him there and all that, and that's in turn how he's. Well, let's be honest. Had his father not put him in a care home, and he's saying that that's why he's got his violent nature that he's. Generally quite good at hiding these days,
he probably
wouldn't have turned out like that. So
it's interesting, isn't it? These sorts of stories that delve into the psyche of the Mitchells, though, because the Mitchells are always so textured and layered, and you can always throw a new sort of cog at the Mitchells to sort of give them a new little spin. And this is another one of those, which is why I think I'm enjoying this story so much, because I'm always up for learning about Mitchell history, because they're such a layered and big textured and historically fascinating family within the show. So I'm very interested to sort of see more of this storyline, see where it goes, see what Stevie is actually up to. Because I'm telling you now, I don't 100% trust him. I like him a lot as a character, but I don't trust him yet.
He's like playing the lonely old man card, doing it really well. So he's just like dropping hints that he's a lonely old man without being like, I'm just a lonely old man. Feeling sorry for me. He's doing it in a we may find the whole thing way with Nadine.
Yeah, the whole thing with Nadine just worked out a little bit too easily for him. I don't think he's connected to Nadine. I feel that was very much just something that fell into his lap.
Yeah.
But the way that all played out just worked extremely well for him and sort of gave him an in, I think, especially with Jay. So, yeah, I mean, let us know in the comment section what you think is the outcome to the Stevie storyline. I'm not convinced that there's going to be some extra elements that we're going to be learning about soon. There's a lot more to it than this, I think. I might be wrong. He might just be a genuinely nice, affable granddad that wants to get to know his family. But at this stage, I'm not convinced. Okay, well, the smaller storyline this week to talk about before we get to Yolandi, and this is Denzel, Nugget, and Amy. And this, I feel like, is the start of something quite interesting. Okay, and I'm not talking about Denzel when I say this. I'm talking about Nugget. Very interesting stuff with Nugget this week.
Is it?
Did you not notice this? I feel like he's getting starting to feel a little bit sort of put out and a little bit left out, and he's sort of best mate is turning hench, basically. Now Nugget knows why this is, but I feel like he's looking at the effects of what is happening to Denzel. Like, he's got this attractive girl now messaging him and saying, can we collab? Right. Can we collab then? Can I just say, there was a scene this week where I did not understand a word of what they were saying, and it makes me feel old when the kids have scenes like this.
I
have no idea what they were talking about whatsoever. And I'm a YouTuber. What they were saying.
What did one of them say? Oh, I can't remember. Said something, and I was like,
Tommy, what?
So normally, what did he say? Like, vile or something? And I was using that as slang.
These kids, like, they do. Like, I think Denzel at one point went, nah, it's calm, man. I'm like, where did all these phrases come from? And I believe that this is what kids say now, because these standards have got very good at, they used to be rubbish at it, but now these standards is getting quite good at, like, getting the slang right.
So you think they're good at getting it right? How would you
I know? Believe that this is what the kids say these days. It feels more believable than it used to. It's calm.
This is how language progresses, isn't it, Rob?
This is how people look back at Shakespeare and think, what the hell were you talking about? This is how language develops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's scary, isn't it? And we have the internet to thank as well these days.
This girl basically messages Denzel and says, right, I want to collab because, Ebony. It puts Amy out straight away because Ebony's not a bad looking girl. And so Amy clearly is a bit jealous. Nugget instantly fancies her. And Denzel is the one that's basically in there with the collabing, like, because she hugs Denzel straight away when they meet, don't they? Yeah.
No wonder Amy were put out. He introduced her to everyone except for Amy as well.
He's not being good with it. Denzel's rubbish at this, isn't he? Like, the politics of how that whole thing's supposed to work. But I genuinely think, keep an eye on Nugget at the moment. Like, and I'm really excited about this because it means Nugget might be getting a storyline of his own.
So what do you think Nugget's going to do then? What you think Nugget's going to try and copy Denzel kind of thing?
Yes, right, I do. Okay. But I've never done this before. But do you know what I'd love to see happen with Nugget? I feel like what is going to happen is that Nugget is going to sort of try and get in on the steroid thing. That's what I think is going to happen. And then maybe something bad will happen with that. And that will knock some sense into Denzel. And then that's going to kind of be the story. That's how that story is going to play out. That's what I think is going to happen. Okay. Do you know what I'd really love to see? And I think Jaheim, who plays Nugget, is ready for this because he's a good little actor. What I would love to see is a real slow burner with Nugget. Right. He's got a best mate who is, you know, hench and could probably, you know, if they put the time into that, they could make Denzel basically be this ladies' man, essentially. You know, if he splits up with Amy, having a best mate who is really attractive to the girls and you're having less luck with that sort of thing is a really bad position to be in, okay?
Yeah.
And what I would really like to see happen, because this is such a problem with young boys at the moment, okay? And make it a real slow burner so that we don't suspect this is where it's going. Is have a time where Nugget basically is getting rejected and rejected and rejected, unsuccessful dates, is rubbish with women, makes an idiot of himself and constantly feels rejected to the point where it starts to really get on his self-confidence. And kids these days, first thing they'll do is turn to the internet. And he then basically asking Google, why am I so unattracted to women? Why am I being rejected? Why don't women fancy me? Ends up being dragged into the world of incel, and we meet the incel, because this is what happens with teenage boys and why the whole Andrew Tate thing is such a massive problem at the moment, because it's very easy for boys his age to sort of be brought into that world. And I'd love to see that sort of playing out sort of from the cradle to the grave of how these boys get brought into this sort of level of thinking and sort of exploring all of that.
So can you explain the incel thing to me? Because people use this and so basically this misogynistic way of living where
it's a very misogynistic way
of everything bad in the world kind of thing.
Essentially, I mean, essentially, yeah. You basically, like, if you are sometimes the way they think is that if women are rejecting me constantly, you blame the woman. You blame the gender of women over that rather than looking at anything you're directly doing yourself. You sort of directly blame women for it. And that really sort of goes down a really deep, dark, psychological, misogynistic route.
Yeah, because there is a lot of that going on, isn't there?
Huge amount of that. And it's a big problem with teenage boys at the moment.
Danny Dyer's done something, hasn't he, recently? Some kind of documentary, and I'm sure they touch on this in it. Yeah.
Hollyoaks did something about this fairly couple of years ago. Yeah, and I watched bits and pieces of it, and it was a really interesting, well-done storyline. But I think the character that got brought in for that sort of was already halfway there when we met him. And it's a soap like EastEnders should do a storyline like that where you really see how, right from the start, it's easy to get dragged into this world and then sort of see that play out over a long period of time. Make him so that Nugget is redeemable, don't get me wrong, but really sort of explore that. And this is the sort of thing that can start that sort of thing. It's basically what made me think of this. So, yeah, it's interesting.
See, it wouldn't be that unbelievable if Tommy just went straight into that kind of thing for me as well. Maybe Tommy and Nugget... I see what you're saying. Yeah, I like Nugget though. I don't want to go down that route.
No, I know. Nugget's my favourite of the kids, which is why I want him to have a big old storyline like that. You know, but I think it'd be very fascinating to sort of see that play out and sort of.
It would be. I see what you're saying. I just always see Nugget. It's weird, isn't it? Because sometimes it gives the most sound advice to Denzel, especially Amy.
Yeah,
and I'm sure I said before, I see side to Ravi, like when Ravi's like giving advice to Zach. So it'd be interesting if Nugget then went against his own advice.
And it's interesting because actually a lot of that incel world is all about sort of toxic masculinity as well. And like sort of talking about like buffing yourself up. And I mean, look at Andrew Tate, you know what I mean? Like, is this basically this insane human being who basically walks around like men should be here and women should be there and we are all butch and macho and all that kind of thing. So I think it's really easy for kids Nugget's age to be sort of brought into that world and sort of mind washed by it, like brainwashed by it all. So yeah, anyway, that's what I'd love to see.
I have a lot of faith in like the new generations that they're a lot more progressively thinking. Is that the right phrase to say? But actually then you see that side to it, you go, oh, I don't know, maybe they're not as with it as we thought, because then they've got the internet, like you said, that has its own pros and cons. So that would actually be quite an interesting route for it to go down, Rob.
And I do it that you meet this guy online that we never meet, but he's sort of like an Andrew Tate figure that, you know, they get an actor to play him. We only see him via the videos and sort of just watch Nugget's brain be warped throughout the whole storyline and then sort of see him being pulled out of it at the other end. I think it'd be fascinating. Anyway, I don't think that's what the story's going to be, but that's what I'd love to see. There we go then. Right, okay. We'll move on now to Yolandi. We have reached the two-hander, and what two-hander it was. On to the final storyline of the week now, which is Yolandi and Patrick. And I loved it. I loved it. I loved the two-hander. It felt really earned as well by the time we got there, didn't it? I really think it was worth kind of taking time to really have these two have this conversation. And both of them absolutely knocked it out of the park. The script by Lauren Clee was awesome, as we have grown to expect from a Lauren Clee script. It's just, everything about it.
She set herself a high standard, hasn't she?
Really has, hasn't she? She really, really has. Like, I'm as excited to see her on the credits now as I am a Simon Ashdown script. Like, it's just...
I agree.
He's the new... They're calling her the new Simon Ashdown. That's all I can
Who's
say.
Who's there, you?
Yeah, me. I'm calling her the new Simon Ashdown. But the run-up to it was great, because obviously Yolandi's behaviour is starting to really set alarm bells going. And Denise basically says to Patrick, right, okay, well, Lily, you need advice, so why don't you go and talk to that nice pastor? Why don't you go and talk to him? He'll know all about it. And oh my God, I wanted to reach through the screen and punch him. Because he turns around to Patrick and says, well, have you considered... It'd be all right. She's probably just got dementia. That's fine. You know, that's probably what this is about. You know, so anything that she says from this point onwards, you can just put down to being her being demented.
Did that make you think like that another part of him being so calculated in choosing older women, because then he can try and 100%. Use that as an excuse, because said they say inappropriate things. Twisted, mate.
For want of a better phrase, he's very good at what he does, you know, because he knows exactly how to handle this. Because this is how he's got away with it. This is how he's got away with it for so long, you know, because it's so difficult to prove. You know, we know that. And the fact that he just kind of gets himself so integrated in the community so that nobody would believe that this nice old pastor would do something like that. It's just,
Do you know what? Now you said that there, what would be an interesting comparison would be if everyone did find out about Yolanda, because everyone's believed Linda straight away with the Dean thing. Like people don't question it. Even when Linda's been caught on a recording saying that she lied, everyone's like, Dean's obviously said something to make you say that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
People would have to save you with Yolanda?
See, I'd like to think that people would, because people know Yolanda so well, it's sort of like, why would she ever make something like this up? So,
would people question the age thing and go, why? You know, like we saw in the flashback. So it's an older woman. Why would the pastor go there?
Again, this is why they've done this so well, I think. Like, they've really addressed all of this. You know, it's been really sort of direct. And Yolanda herself directly talks about this in the two-hander, because
she does.
So obviously Patrick goes to her and says, right, okay, so everything's fine. We'll just go to the doctors and we'll have a look at your brain, bless you. And Yolanda just goes mad and says, no, I'm not losing my marbles. And then goes to say it, and then we're into the two-hander, and she can't say it, so Elaine rings her. I thought that bit really worked well, where we sort of just see Patrick's reaction as Elaine explains it to her, explains it to him over the phone. That was really nice.
Yeah, that was well done. Because I did think, shouldn't Elaine have gone around and said it in person? But then I was like, no, because if Yolanda's just spoke to her in that moment, it's kind of a now or never, just tell him now before I change my mind. Yeah,
exactly.
No, it
did
work. Yeah.
Right. Really worked nicely, and I just loved the way that Rudolph Walker kind of acted it, because you just sort of saw it all in his face, and you sort of just saw it, like the realization exactly, because it didn't hit him straight away, I don't think. Like, it was just when he was talking to Yolanda through the bathroom door, because she sort of runs in the bathroom and can't face him, and it's just as they're talking through the door that you sort of see it sort of slowly dawning on Patrick exactly what he's just been told, and then he wants to go and clobber the pastor.
Well, I think that was a very, like, we briefly said earlier, didn't we? It was an emotional roller coaster when we were chatting before we started recording. And it was, weren't it? It goes,
the
entire episode.
Which the best two-handers do. It was a very, very traditional two-hander, which I've been yearning for years. Like, the Jay and Lola one was nice, all right? It did what it did really well. But it wasn't so much the traditional one, which is literally just two characters in one room, just talking to each other. And that's what this was. It was like your classic old EastEnders two-hander. The internet went mad for it. You know, everybody loved it. The mad thing is, considering the subject matter was basically woman tells her partner that she was sexually assaulted, like, you'd think on the surface, quite a dark, sort of slightly depressing topic. I did not expect to smile as much as I did during the episode.
Yeah, that is true.
And I think the conclusion I've come to is that Patrick and Yolanda are my favourite couple in the show by far.
I was just going to say that's what it's about, isn't it? That's why
I'm one of my favourite in the history of the show.
Such a nice couple
together, they just make me smile.
It's many moments as well, like when they started laughing about, you know, and obviously Yolanda, I'm trying to think of how to phrase it, got angry. I think that's why it worked, because they are just such a good couple together, aren't they?
Just to kind of pause on that monologue that Yolanda had.
Yes.
Which I thought was really, really powerful. Because Patrick, the way he said, it wasn't him saying, oh, well, you must have led him on. That wasn't what he was saying. What he was saying is, why, if you knew that he was getting a little bit inappropriate, then why didn't you just stay the hell away from him? That was his thinking, all right? And I got where he was coming from, but it wasn't what he should have said at that moment. And Yolanda basically goes mad at him and says, no, why the hell, after I'd said no, why the hell didn't he stay away from me? Which was the perfect way of just exploding that.
There were a lot of moments, though, where Patrick reacted in the wrong way. Like, when she's in the bathroom and he runs out to go chase after Pastor Clayton to go and try and find him. And I'm thinking, oh, come on, Patrick, you're handling all of this wrong.
It's not about you. You think that's about Yolandia, but it's not about Yolandia. That's about you and your own personal anger at the situation.
Which is true. But then I thought, also, it's like, I know that it didn't happen to him, but he's also in shock from what he's heard. So he is reacting in a way that he would react. So even him saying all those things, because at first I was like, this is appalling. I expected better from you, Patrick. But then I thought, he's trying to make sense of it all because he's only just found out, hasn't he? So
what do you do?
He's just saying everything out loud, really, that's going through his head. So, yeah.
It's great because actually what you're angry about at that moment and what he was angry about at that specific moment was, this man has done that to my partner. And that's the emphasis on my as opposed to partner. You know, it's you have done that to someone that I care about. How dare you? I'm going to rip your face off. And that's the initial anger. And I got it, you know, and there is a side of you that sort of expects you want Patrick to have that moment, don't you? Because who wouldn't have that moment of, right, I'm going to kill him. I'm going to go around and absolutely destroy him right now. So that's completely understandable. But just Yolandi kind of rushing out to the square and telling him, look, no, this isn't about you. I need to have, we'll talk, but this isn't the way to deal with this. I need to deal with this in my own way. Just really, really kind of nicely handled. And I think it's interesting that they're still not involving the police at any point during this. Like, what do you think of that? Is it the right way of doing that, do you think? Is that the right message to send? What do you think?
I don't think there's any right message to send because it's a personal thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So one person who's had something similar happen might want to go to the police, and that's fine if they feel able to. But I think Yolandi touched on it when she was saying to Elaine, like, I don't want someone to have to inspect my body. She don't want to be questioned in that kind of way, interrogated, interviewed. Then she's got to maybe tell more people than she'd like to tell. Mm. She obviously has decided, I feel
dignity thing, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's very private. She's very much about, she doesn't want everyone to know, which I think is fair enough as well. She said to Patrick, I don't want people imagining what he did to me.
Yeah.
She obviously knows her limits. There's nothing to say she might not change her mind down the line.
Mm.
The church might, if the church do take sides with it, I don't know about how I feel about Levi, but
okay,
if they do decide, right, we do take away, they may even encourage her to go to the police and say, you'll have our support. We've actually got this on record that somebody else has made this claim back, you know, when the other lady did. I don't know. I don't think that there is a right way for her to go about it. So she don't feel comfortable going to the police. And we say sending a message. I think it's individual to everyone who experiences it. Everyone's individual experience will be different.
Absolutely.
Or somebody could experience the exact same thing as Yolandi, but how they react to it would be completely different to how Yolandi would react to it.
I feel like what the story has said so far, though, is that how difficult it is to get. It hasn't really sold the idea, because, you know, when we had the flashbacks, we had one woman,
I see what you're saying,
and immediately she was told, well, there's nothing we can do, we can't prove that at all. Yolandi said a few times now, well, there's no point going to the police because Jimmy knows how difficult it is. And, you know, so it's not, I don't feel like they've really sold that as much as an option. Now, I'm not saying that whether that's right or wrong, but I just think it's interesting that they've not really, like, Yolandi's not even considered going to the police really about this, because she's just decided already that it's pointless and that nothing will come out of it, and that she doesn't want to kind of go down something that's going to make this matter more intrusive. She sort of just wants to sort of deal with it in the way that she feels comfortable with, by going to the church and hoping that that makes it, that makes what she needs to happen. It's interesting, I think.
It's a bigger issue than it sounds, isn't it, really?
Yeah,
100%. Because, that is obviously a thought for a lot of people as well. What is the point in going? Because I'm not going to be believed. Mm. Or I've not got enough what they require as evidence. And, you know, where do you draw the line on evidence? And
the thing is, though, there's no point in hiding away from the fact that that's a factor, is it? Like, there's no point in pretending that these things are easy to prove or these things are easy to convict. Like, we threw stats out when we were talking about it on the actual episode it happened. Like, it's
and that's only about things that have been reported.
Exactly.
So
it's a minute amount of convictions that come out of these reports. Out of thousands of reports, such a small percentage of them actually lead to a conviction. So there's no point in hiding away from that fact. But it's sort of like, so if nothing's going to change there, then what the hell happens? So
it's like you say, though, then, because then if they write in that she goes to the police and he does get convicted, that's actually not very realistic. But equally, you don't want to write in that she goes to the police and nothing happens, because then people would go, well, what's the point? Because nothing happens. So it's quite difficult.
And there's a sense of responsibility, I think, when you're doing a storyline like this, isn't it? Mm. Sort of play. I think the storyline needs to be played out realistically. So, you know, and realistically, a police charge probably isn't going to happen to him because, you know, there's no direct forensic proof that it happened. So what can you do? What can they do? You know, it's...
unless there was a camera in the room where it happened,
yeah.
Which obviously there weren't. Have been.
Imagine if CCTV solved this, Ruth.
Of all the times, of all the times, Square where the CCTV delivers. Camera worked, yeah.
But that, what we were saying about the whole generational thing was interesting because Yolande sort of directly said that herself and said, mm-hmm. like, you know, people my age, we weren't used to the word consent. You know, this wasn't a thing. I wondered about that, her saying that women her age weren't saying hashtag me too. I think I saw a few people online kind of go, okay, a bit pamphlety there, but that was a bit on the nose. I don't know. I thought it worked. What did you think of that moment?
I thought it worked. I didn't think it worked all right. No. Yeah, I thought it was quite interesting,
I thought, because actually you sort of wonder whether there's a set, you got the impression there that Yolande almost kind of was looking at them going, you know, at least women that are younger than me have that, you know, they've got more sort of sense about this sort of thing. So I think that's what that was about, wasn't it? They've got like a whole movement to sort of kind of help people out who is experiencing this horrific issue, you know, and people my age didn't. I thought that's basically what that was about. And I thought that was quite nicely handled.
And it were interesting, obviously, she said, this is the reason that she said he wouldn't try it with a younger woman, and this is
which
the
is right.
Why.
She nailed it completely, didn't she? That's exactly why he does it to older women, like, because A, they are less sure of how to handle it and they don't know what to do about it. And I thought it was interesting that basically, like, the whole, basically every segment of the flashbacks episode was sort of addressed indirectly through Yolande and Patrick's two-hander. I thought it was quite interesting because you had the whole scene of a man wanting to go out and attack the pastor. That was addressed in the flashback. Yeah. The police thing was addressed in the flashback. Mm-hmm. The fact that we're now having Yolande talking to the church. We've had Yolande sort of talk to her friend. Now, fortunately, actually, everything's worked quite in Yolande's favour, unlike those four women that
so
we
far.
Know, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, so far. So Levi, what do you think? I got the impression that Levi was just going to do his best at this point. Did you not?
I did, but then I'm like, this seems too easy. I don't know. There was something, or he believes her for now, but then somehow the pastor's going to convince him. Actually, no, Yolande's
yeah, possibly.
Confused.
I mean, there's an element here where you sort of think we're in a soap, so maybe there is going to be some form of element of melodrama about the situation, which I hope they avoid them mostly. You know, I'd like it to just be something like this. I think you've got a responsibility not to over-dramatise it and make it too ridiculous that it was with a storyline like this. I do wonder, though, whether, because we saw one of the women in the flashbacks, they did what Yolande's done. So I wonder if that will sort of be something that they'll refer back to. Maybe, yeah, because if Levi... But then the impression I got was, in the flashback, the priest that woman spoke to was like, you don't come to church for a bit. He's leaving soon, and then we'll just brush it all under the carpet. So I don't know whether that woman actually managed to... whether that went any higher with that woman.
So you've got faith in Levi that he's not going to be like
that? At the minute, I have. Because I think Levi's age is quite relevant. Well, I think Levi's age is quite relevant because Levi is quite young himself, isn't he? So I think Levi is there within that generation that Yolande was talking about, where there's sort of more awareness about the issue, you know?
I'm just hoping that there's somehow some kind of church records where they'll look on file and go, oh, a woman did claim this back then. So now we've had two separate women, two separate churches claiming a very similar thing.
Yeah, I mean, we only met those few women in that flashback. We don't know exactly how many this has happened to, you know, so there could be more for all we know. So at the minute, I've got faith in Levi, and I think I do wonder whether there's more that, I do wonder if there's more to come with Levi outside of that. You know, him and Chelsea were getting on very well. So is Levi going to be a new regular? I'm not sure whether that's going to play out, or whether Levi's just here for this storyline.
Possibly. We'll see.
Interesting. But yeah, the two-hander itself was absolutely beautifully pitched, really nicely done, fantastic performances for us. It just blows my mind that Yolande was ever axed as a character. Like, what the hell? Like, why?
Separated as well.
I know,
but they've always been together all this time.
Like 2008, she was axed.
Yeah,
2008.
Yeah, yeah.
That's like. Yeah. That's like 16 years or so. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, that's like 16 years or so of what we 18. Haven't had Yolande. Yeah, yeah, maths. it's like so long that we haven't had Yolandi in the show, mm. and we've been missing out on this sort of amazing material. You know, it's frustrating. I know, you know, a producer can come along and see stuff that other producers can't. You know, for example, one producer came along and thought, do you know what needs to happen? Ronnie and Roxy need to die. That's what needs to happen, because I see no further potential in them. You know, so it's... And then another producer might come along and think something entirely different. So I know it's all subjective in that
front, but I know, I'll bring them back from the dead.
Yeah. I still wouldn't object to it. I don't care.
No, I know, that's what I'm saying. Do it.
Yeah, do it, please. So yeah, really nicely done. So after the two-hander, we got the scenes where Patrick does eventually confront the pastor, which I think we were sort of wanting to happen at some point, weren't they? It wasn't a massive thing, but I think what it did was give the pastor that moment of, all right, okay, so Patrick knows, so Yolandi is not afraid to talk about what happened to her. So what do you think will happen now? Do you think he'll make a run for it, or do you think he'll stick around and stay and sort of...
No, I think he's going to try and twist it and make out that Yolandi's lying, and that maybe even go down the dementia kind of...
Yeah, maybe he might kind of push that forward a little bit. Yeah. I'm telling you now, Agatha is going to be a problem. And I said this a few weeks ago.
That's true.
I said this a few weeks ago. Agatha's going to be a problem. And remember, Agatha was accusing Yolandi of going after him at one point, and she will stick with that. I'm telling you now, Agatha is going to be a massive thorn in the side. And Stella's a bitch and all, so she won't help matters either.
Or is he going to make out it was consensual or something and go, I did do something and I shouldn't have, I'm married, or I don't know. But I feel like he's not... He's prepared now, like Yolandi said to Patrick. If you'd have told him that we're going to Levi, he's now going to be prepared to be able to defend himself. I want him to not be prepared, but he's going to be prepared anyway, isn't he? Because he knows what he's doing.
Of course he is.
He'll be thinking about just in case she goes to the police, just in this case won't she goes be. To church.
I find it difficult to believe that this is the closest he's ever come to being caught out. You know, like he'll have an answer to every single scenario, I would have thought.
Yeah,
you know, definitely. You don't get as good at doing this, you know what I mean by that, but you don't get to be this level of that he's at without knowing what to do should somebody speak out, I think. So I think we've got a little while to go with this yet. Patrick and Yolandi are going on holiday, which frankly I'm not surprised because they've just done a two-hander, so now they need a break. I hope they're not away for long. I'm sort of concerned now that Denzel's just been left to his own devices. That's a bit of a worry. Yeah. Patrick was like, oh no, that's fine, we'll sort something out with it for Denzel. So
yeah, but shouldn't Kim be coming back soon anyway?
Well, you'd think so, but you'd think their first call would be, do you want to come back because me and Yolanda need to go on holiday and you've been gone for months, so do you want to come back?
Or maybe Denise will move into theirs or something because she's fulfilling it.
Ways around it, but I was sort of like, Denzel, just leave Denzel, are you? I'm sure Denzel will be fine, and the house that you live in will not be burnt to the ground by the time you return. Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, sure. Yeah, interesting.
We've not mentioned the scene, the bit after when Yolandi said her monologue, and then she goes to wash the pots, and then Patrick's just like, that was brilliant.
That's the bit that made me smile. And that actually made me laugh. And this is why I love Patrick and Yolandi so much. And why they are my favourite couple, I think, and one of my favourite couples in the history of the show. I love Patrick and Yolandi so much. I just felt absolute warmth when I watched them together. Like, they're beautiful. Yeah. Like, the two actors have got such chemistry together. Both of them individually are amazing characters. Both of them individually are amazing actors. So put them together and the screen just sings at you. And it's gorgeous. But yeah, I love that scene. Because I think it was realistic that you would just try and... Because I always think the word twinkle was invented with Patrick in mind. You know, if you looked at the word twinkle in the dictionary, Patrick's picture is there. So he sort of gave that little bit of a twinkle, and it's so what Patrick would have done.
He needed it in that moment, didn't he, as well? And he knew that would be a risky move, Patrick. But he knows Yolandi so well that he knew that she was going to respond
exactly.
well to that.
Exactly. And I think Yolandi let him do it as well. Because Yolandi's she can't be worked around, can't be got around that easily, but I think she let him do it. You know, it's just nice.
She's so clever as well, because then they go to clean the glass up and Patrick spent all that time, if you like, looking after Yolandi, talking it through, then Yolandi gets to look after him by trying to clean his hand up. It were all just so nicely done.
Amazing. Nail Lauren Clee to the ground, I say, and don't let her leave. She's amazing. Yeah. Really, really good stuff this week. Really enjoyed it. This shouldn't be too difficult, but Gold Star, Ray?
I'm going to give it to Patrick.
I'll give mine to Yolandi. There you go. There you go. It was always going to happen, I think. Not the hardest decision we've ever had to make. I mean, if you had anybody different, let us know in the comment section. But I think a lot of gold stars were probably handed out to Patrick and Yolandi this week, and future Lauren Clee, and the director as well, Emma Bridgerton Williams, I think her name was, I want to say. Really nice stuff this week. Brilliant. Right. As usual, ladies and gents, we'll end the podcast with some comments from you lovely people.
Sarah, we've had an email from Dan Wilson who says, Dear Robin Ree, oh my goodness, the pain followed by humour and ending in love. The way Angela Winter portrayed Yolanda's anguish and how Rudolph Walker played a demented but devoted Patrick was phenomenal. Of course, they are always wonderful actors, but this episode really let them give their all. It was probably the best two-hander I've seen, and the way it ended, I think they used that song not so long ago when Yolanda returned to the square, so it was clever to have it used again to reassert Patrick and Yolanda's love. I also don't recall an episode closing with popular music before, but I could be wrong. But to have that with the last shot of Patrick and Yolanda staying on screen to the very end of the credits was so special. Anyway, it was an incredible episode that made me shed several tears, all the awards and gold stars, Dan.
That's very, very true, Daniel. And I can help you with that final question, if you so wish. Times where the EastEnders credits have been replaced by alternative music. Before. Obviously, in times we've had things like Peggy's theme and Pat's theme and Dot's theme, you know, where the sort of the music has been slightly rejigged to sort of accommodate the exit of a really iconic character. But we have also had times where other music has replaced the end credits. I mean, as recently as during the Lola storyline, it happened a fair few times. The earliest example that I can find was in 1995, which is far back of then. The local celebrating VE Day, the theme tune was replaced by It's a Lovely Day Tomorrow by Jack Payne. December 1999, the episode ended with the song, with Frank Sinatra's Let It Snow as the residents gathered around before the screen fades into a black screen. All of this is from the EastEnders wiki page. There's a load of examples on here where the end credits have been changed, but it has happened a fair few times. It's a rare thing. So yeah, it was a nice treat at the end of that Patrick and Yolanda episode. And that song that they were playing with Patrick and Yolanda has very much, very quickly become their song, I think, that you just associate with Patrick and Yolanda. So yeah, it was really, really nice. Really, really nice stuff. We have had a comment from Maggie Elizabeth Walsh, who says about the two-hander, a roller coaster of emotions in 30 minutes and handled with such nuanced performances by Angela and Rudolph. This was EastEnders at its absolute best.
Yeah, and I've got another one from our Instagram from Ian Harrod, who says classic EastEnders. Pacing was brilliant, not a weak point in the whole 30 minutes.
Agree with both. Agreed. I mean, it was exemplary. Yeah. It really, really was, and just another triumph for this era, which just keeps.
You know what? At the end of it, I was like, "What? It's been 30 minutes."
I know, it flew by, didn't it?
Yeah, considering it were just two people, that were amazing how quickly it felt it went. Anyway,
yeah, it was really good. Hannah Todd has messaged us with a theory about the George storyline. Prediction: George has a fight, ends up in ICU. Cindy declares her love for him. George, having a near-death experience, declares his love for her. All blows up when Elaine finds out. Anna is happy that they are back together, but Gina isn't, as she still doesn't trust her mum. It's interesting, that sort of dynamic between Cindy and the girls. You almost feel like Anna is very easily sort of swayed, and Gina, I think, still has an element of mistrust about Cindy, as soon as Cindy steps like a toe out of line, I think Gina will be there on it like that. So I think I always say all that Gina is team Elaine, so it might be quite interesting to sort of see that division between the girls. Actually, that would be nice to see, wouldn't it?
I still think George Jr. could mix things up with Cindy. I think he will.
Remains to be seen, but we should be meeting Junior very soon, I do believe. So that is exciting. If you would like to get in touch with us or send us an email or a comment or a question, you can do the following.
You can find us on Facebook at Albert Square After Dark, on Twitter and Instagram at E20 After Dark. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to like and subscribe. You can listen to us on Apple and all your favourite podcast sites. Drop us an email at e20afterdarkpodcast@gmail.com. And if you'd like to buy us coffee, you can do so by going on buymeacoffee.com/E20After Dark.
Yes, you can indeed. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you very much for listening. We love you, love you, love you, viewers and listeners. Yes, we do. Join us at the same time next week as we will discuss another week in our favourite London borough. Blah. What are words? Until then, it's goodbye from me.
Goodbye from me.
See you next week, guys. Goodbye. Bye.